Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. Oh, excuse me. Well, as you can tell, I'm still having a little bit of problem with my throat. It just doesn't seem to want to go away, but I'm still here. We're still here. And we're going to continue to bring you information and inspiration as we do every week. My name is Empress Chi, and you are in tune to New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. Before we go into tonight's program, we, of course, always give thanks and praises to our Creator, and we are certainly very cognizant of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Tonight's program, we're going to focus on the topic that we have been talking about for quite a while, and of course now we are preparing to launch the national campaign. The national campaign to deal with the violations of our women and girls. The national campaign for the elimination of violence and abuse of our women and girls. We're starting nationally, meaning in North America, and then ultimately we will take it throughout the diaspora, meaning a campaign to address some of the concerns, the issues, et cetera, as it pertains to all types of violations. And again, we're talking about ethnic and gender-related violations. It is so important that we phrase these things in the appropriate way today because our movement, meaning the Million Women Movement, and our work is really geared on an international level. And with that said, we have to prepare accordingly. So we will use specific kinds of language as well as different, or shall we say, more holistic applications in our work to assure that as we proceed, we are able to accomplish much. Now, this month is considered October as Domestic Violence Month all over the country. And we found it very interesting that, you know, it is that much. But I can tell you that what we're doing for the Me Woman Movement is beginning to really take greater control over our own destiny. And very soon we're going to, and we talked about this before as well, and that is to put into place what we call Black Women's Appreciation and Awareness Month. Now, we have not pushed it this month as we did in previous years, primarily because we were really getting ready to put our action plan out there for you to a greater extent so that it can be really administered nationwide, and that is, in fact, what we're in the process of doing. It's a very, very comprehensive plan, a direct action plan, in addition to a black print. And we're going to tell you more about that later on tonight as we go into tonight's program. But we're going to be talking with a sister tonight who I've had the opportunity to talk with a few times and definitely feel her energy, like her energy. You know, Dr. Randy Short, of course, is on our program often, and, you know, he's so good at connecting people. And he was able to connect myself and the sister who's going to come on tonight. And we also invite you all as well to join us in tonight's dialogue. Hopefully we will get the chat room open tonight, but we certainly will get the lines open for you. And again, we're going to talk about violence and abuse, and not in the European context. We're not talking about just that domestic violence thing, no. We're talking about the context of ethnic and gender-related violence and abuse, and what we call violations. And there is a specific reason why we are approaching it in that way, because we do this as a family. We're looking for solutions as a community. And so to do that, we've got to look at it in its fullest context. And so, again, this is not to blame anyone. It's not to point fingers. It's not the male bash, none of that. But it is to tell the truth. We're going to speak truth to power. And with that, to come up with some real solutions. We've got to heal. Tonight's program I am dedicating to my brother, who may transition earlier this week or possibly last week. We don't know, because when they found him, he was already deceased for a few days. I dedicate this program to him because his behavior, unfortunately, was as a result of this system. And I don't have any problems in saying that. And, again, I'm not trying to, you know, not put the blame where things need to be, but for those who don't know, being brought here, being raped, being castrated, being murdered, being just mutilated, you name it, our people, this is what has happened to our people. And so we're not going to forget it, and we need to understand what has happened to us as a people as a result. So, again, it is no attempt to try to not have responsibility on various persons, but at the same time, we got to call it the way it really is, that in many cases, we're looking at the extension of what I call attempted global off-white supremacy. We'll be right back. Indeed, and be it South Africa, be it South Philly, be it wherever Africans are, the situation is relatively the same. The system is really not about trying to, do right by us, and so we've got to do right by ourselves, for ourselves. So a little later on, we're going to remind you why you should be supporting the Million Woman March and now its movement. And we're going to also let you know that on Friday, the 25th, we will be, in fact, observing the Million Woman March 16th year anniversary. Now, initially, we had planned to do our reunion this year, but as it turns out, I decided not to do that. We are going to wait until the time comes where a mayor of a city will welcome us like they do these other people and extend that red carpet and other things. And until then, I'm not going to suggest that our women or any of our people take any money into a city that doesn't give us proper respect. So we're going to wait. As we move forward for tonight, again, our key topic, though we're not limited to that, but our key topic is going to be violence and abuse, again, what we call violations. And what we're going to do is we're going to get ready to go to our live line, and we're going to talk with Sister Mecca, who is going to share some of her experiences. And we're sure that many of you have, if not experienced some of what we're going to hear, you know someone it has. Some of you grew up in a family where you saw some of what we're going to talk about. And again, we're not trying to run away from reality. We're not trying to push this stuff underneath the rug any longer. We are going to address this the way it has to be. And that is, if we do not deal with this issue of violence and abuse of our women and girls, I guarantee you, as a people, we're going to catch more hell than you can possibly imagine. Because make this real clear to yourselves and to others. Fundamentally speaking, if a people do not respond to their women and children in a certain manner, the rest of the stuff is definitely not going to go well. Now, any intelligent person knows that. The system knows that. And that's why they have now targeted our sisters, because we were the last stronghold. We know what they did to our brothers and are still doing to our brothers. People thought that because our sisters were able to continue to move forward and press forward, that therefore this thing wasn't happening to them. Well, it was. It just wasn't as obvious, nor was it maybe to the extent. Well, all of that has now changed. And if we do not at least begin to accept the reality of this matter, then, again, we are only going to endanger that next generation to an extent that we don't want to see. So I'm saying this, and all of us will now have to deal with the responsibility of either moving things forward or being a hindrance. And if you're a hindrance, then you need to suffer the consequences for that. So with that said, we again are going to get ready to go to our live line. And again, we're talking about the issue of violence and abuse of our women and girls. And what are we going to do? You know, we have many brothers out here who are wonderful brothers. So let us not get confused or not try to, you know, act like we're trying to take this somewhere else. But we've got to address this issue as a family, as a people. Brothers, you got to step it up, really, because this thing is getting out of control. And you hear many reports that we do here at New Day, the last one being, of course, a little girl, how old was she, 6 years old, something like that, and this dude in Louisiana who raped and murdered her said that she seduced him? I mean, you know, of course there's going to always be a few folk who, you know, kind of off the rocker, but we're seeing this a bit too much. And I'm saying again, brothers, you're not stepping out and stepping on folk like you should. And this is, you know, again, not to bash our men, because some of you are doing that. Some of you are about that. And Wally Mubaruti, Brother Kamal Cabone, Austin Maddox, many others. But it's not enough. So the question now is going to be, what are we going to do? Because sisters, I'm going to tell you, for those sisters who are not stepping up and stepping forward, and I'm saying the ones who can, not the ones who aren't able to, but the ones who can. If you're not stepping up and stepping forward, well, let me tell you, y'all gonna get dealt with too. You're either, as my brother says, you're either going our way or you're in the way. So I said it, I meant it, and we ready to rumble. So with that said, let's get ready to go to our live line. Sister Mecca, I'm not seeing you, so you need to push one right now because there's a lot of calls right now in the queue, and I need you to push one so that I know you are there. Okay, I got you now. All right, very good. What we're going to do is we're going to go to our live line, and if I'm not mistaken, we might have Dr. Randy Sugar to come in with us very soon as well. But first we're going to come up with Sister Mecca, and we're going to hear some of what this sister has experienced. And again, family, this is not, again, to try to bash anybody. We got to deal with truth. And it's not that sister's not doing some crazy things either, but again, let's be realistic. How many men you really think getting raped by some women? I'm not saying it doesn't happen or it hasn't happened, don't get me wrong. But for real, come on now, the majority, all right? So got to deal with this straight up. We cannot run away from it any longer. I'm not going to let you, not if I can help it. So at any rate, let's go to our live line, and we're going to talk with Sister Mecca, who's going to really be very candid. And again, if you all can't deal with truth, this is not the radio program for you tonight, all right, because we're coming straight at you with the real deal. Because again, I mean, in order for us to deal with this situation, in order for us to heal, we have to deal with it directly. Again, direct action. That's the call now. Sister Mecca, do we have you on this line?
Yes. Greetings. I'm here.
Greetings, my sister. Welcome to this segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. And I want to thank you for taking the time to join us tonight and for agreeing to share with us some of the experiences and the information that that you have, you know, gone through, and has certainly shared some with me. The purpose for doing this, family, is, again, so that we all can better assess. Some of us don't need to assess any further because we went through it, but there are many who maybe haven't, no, not no, maybe have not. We need to be able to understand better because we've got to do something about it. And so very soon I'll be going on a national tour. That national tour will entail testimonies. And again, not for the purpose of trying to rip people apart or try to tear people, that's not our purpose. We want to eradicate. We want to eliminate this problem. And again, of course, you know, it's not going to go away overnight. We know that. But the better we understand something, the more prepared we're going to be able to deal with it. Sisters got to learn to care and love one another a little more. Brothers the same way, and then with all of us. But some of what's keeping us from doing that is some of these hidden secrets or some of these other things that have happened to us. And we've got to begin to address it. So, Sister Mecca, the mic is yours.
Well, first I want to give thanks to the Divine Creator and the ancestors, and honor to Empress, and also Randy for inviting me and introducing us. Also, greetings to family, friends, and even enemies if you're on the line. But I want to first start out by just sharing my life experience with dealing with abuse. I encountered abuse. Verbal abuse starting first with my mom. Either you're gonna get your esteem from your peers or your parents. And while mom was, you know, telling me I was black, calling me names, and while my friends was telling me I was black and calling me names, I just was lost growing up not having my father there. So I turned to the brothers. And when I was 14, I had my first child, and that was my first encounter with abuse with my daughter's father, beating me up at 14, 4 months pregnant with his child, because I encountered him having the experience with, you know, drugs, and he didn't like it. He didn't like my reaction to it, so he felt that he needed to beat me up because I violated his space with him using drugs. And then at 16, I also encountered, you know, being beat with, by my daughter's my son's father, you know, 6 months pregnant with a bat, in the hospital, 6 months pregnant with a broken arm, on crutches, 6 months pregnant, because he felt as though he owned me and I was his possession. And, you know, he had some mental health issues that I wasn't aware of, and having low self-esteem and feeling like he was the only person that made me feel wanted because I didn't feel comfortable being home with my mom. I turned to the streets at a young age. And at 16, he introduced me to drugs and guns and that street life. So I was caught up in his world and did everything he told me to do because he was the one that was taking care of me. So he was like the abuser, my father, my lover. He was the man that I, you know, turned to for everything. So I felt as though I needed him. So I stayed. You know, although he was smuggling me with the pillows and strangling me and, you know, abusing me, he was just doing whatever he felt as though he needed to do. I just didn't understand why so much abuse. Why? You know, I didn't understand why he was doing it, but he was doing it, and I was allowing it, and I was staying in the relationship, and I wasn't leaving until he committed murder, and he killed the woman, and the next thing you know, the police picking me up, I'm involved in the murder case. And then how I escaped him was the 13 years. How I escaped the first abusive relationship was he had to leave town because my mother gave him an ultimatum when I went home beat up. My mother stepped to him and told him, either you leave the town. I'm 14. This man in his 20s. I'm 14. He lied and told me that he was 18 and he was really 20-something years old. So I didn't know. He completely lied and gave me a false identity. I didn't know, you know. I turned to the streets so young because I didn't want to be home with mom because I was always being abused by mom, you know. So how I escaped him, he had to leave the town. So, and then the 16-year-old, when I was 16, my 16-year-old baby father, at that time, he went to prison for murder, and that's how I was able to escape him. And then I ran into another brother at 19. It's like every 3 months, I'm pregnant. So at 19, I'm pregnant 3 months later again. This crazy one tried to kill me. Knives to my throat. He was Hispanic. I mean, I don't understand why, but to their reason for doing what they was doing to me, now that I'm grown, I'm 41, and I asked them, why? Because you was good to me. You was always there. You was a good girl, but that wasn't no reason for you to beat on me the way you was, you know? So I still to this day don't understand why I was being abused pregnant. You know, I'm carrying your child, and all you want to do is beat me up and teach me the wrong thing. Nothing really positive came out of the abuse, but the children, my children came out of the relationship. That was the only real positive thing that came out of it. So at 19, I'm pregnant again by a Hispanic guy. My baby dad, he went to prison. That's how I escaped them too. And he ended up escaping out of prison, and the FBI was watching me because of him. He raped me. And yes, you can be raped by your husband. Yes, you can be raped by your daughter, by your children's father. So when I was 19 pregnant, my daughter's father raped me and tried to kill me. He had a knife to my throat. He had violated parole and blamed me. And I had lost my consciousness because when I came to, I had called the police. And they said they had already got him. I was calling the police to report what he did to me, but he had turned himself into the police at that time. But thank God he didn't kill me. But he had the knife in my throat telling me that he was going to kill me, and he cut my underwear and he raped me. Yes, my daughter's father. And then I got married to a sexual predator. I was 22, met this guy, got married, thought he was the one, married him. I was ashamed that the church was going to have something to say about me. You know, four children, four different men. So I felt like I got to marry this one because I'm ashamed of what the church going to say or think. And ended up marrying a sexual offender. From 7 years old to 12 years old, my ex-husband was raping my daughter. And I didn't even know it, right in the house, the same home. But when I got into the music business, I was already in the music business when I met him. So I was relieving my daughter of what he was doing to her, because when my music career would get busy, I would send her to South Jersey. I was living in North Jersey. I would send her to my mother. When my daughter turned 16, that's when she broke down and told me what my ex-husband was doing to her. So when I counted how old my ex-husband was, he was born in 59. My daughter was born in 1987, my first child. That, you know, I counted how old my daughter was, and I went to his job, and I just tried to kill. I tried to kill him, you know. And I had him arrested because I didn't know. I had to do something because my daughter, she kept saying, "Mom, I don't blame you." She's crying. I'm crying. And thank God I had a girlfriend in the car with me that had went through it. She had her own experience with her father killing her mother. And her waking up, her sister 3 or 4 years old, waking up in her mama's blood after her daddy killed her mama. And then my girlfriend had to go live with her auntie, her auntie's husband was molesting her and her daughter. So when my daughter broke down and told me what my ex-husband was doing to her, I had support. I had my girlfriend in the car with me. So my girlfriend helped me and my daughter to get through what I was currently going through. What my daughter told me at 16, she's now 25, a school teacher. She, you know, so it's just so much that's happened in my life. I don't want to take up too much time on the air going into the details with everything, but so many events happened from the age of 14 to about 27, 28 years old, you know, and it's more to the story. It's just so much, you know, so much of the abuse. I just been through a lot, and what kept me sane, what kept me not turning to drugs or prostitution or rape or picking up a gun and killing every man on the planet out of hate, out of anger, what keeps me still going where I can still love a brother, because I love my brothers. I don't take baggage out or anger out on my brothers because of the choices of men that I chose or what these brothers you know, did to me, you know, but what kept me sane was forgiveness. I was instantly forgiving them as they was doing these horrible things to me. I was forgiving them and forgiving them. And some of my baby daddies to this day, they still sick. Some of them still calling me. I counsel them. I help them. Sometimes they cry. They beg me still for forgiveness because I tell, I forgive you. You don't got to keep calling me, begging me for forgiveness. My children are grown. My babies are 18, 21, 23, and 25 now. So y'all don't have to keep calling me. And to be honest, there's really nothing to say. There's really nothing to say. Call your children, you know. But, I mean, that's pretty much my story. I mean, it's more, but, you know, I'm writing another biography, inspirational book about my life. And these are some true things that happened, you know, rapes and, and I was involved in a lot of murders. They were breaking out of prison. The cops was always picking me up, questioning me. I mean, you are a product of your environment, and the company that you keep in your life, you know, it means a lot. You can't, you know, you have to, we have choices, and you have to choose the people that you keep in your life. And I believe that you attract who you are, and I was saying to myself, I know what it was with me. It was not loving myself, not caring about myself, not enough to leave because nobody told me or showed me what beauty was or what love was. Love, I believe, is something that has to be taught, you know, and I didn't know what it was. I thought it was, you know, the romantic Roman aspect of love, but now that I know what it is and that I love and respect myself, I will never accept it ever again, you know. All a man had to do is just raise their voice at me, and I'm gone. I'm not going to sit there. I mean, I feel like right. The divine creator gave me enough chances where I escaped so many rapes and escaped so much. So I was around death. I had 3 near-death experiences. I mean, these brothers was really trying to kill me, strangling me, and thank God I would have somebody at the house to get them off of me, you know, or, you know. It's just, right. I mean, I've been through a lot. I've been in the juvenile detention system because when my daughter father beat me with the bat, I tried to kill him. My mother had just bought some new knives, and I just walked up to him, and I just started slicing this man because I just got tired. I just snapped, and then they picked me up, and I gave them a knife, and they had arrested me. I'm 16, 6 months pregnant in shackles, and my aunt came to get me. They had kicked me out the town, so my aunt came to get me out of the juvie. That they released me to my aunt. They told me I couldn't go back to the town. But the reason why my son's father that beat me with the bat put me in the hospital pregnant, the reason why he got away with it is because his grandfather worked on the police force. So he kept getting away with it because his granddaddy worked on the police force. So they will always come and protect and get him.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, needless to say, sister, we certainly appreciate you sharing this story, this information, because I've been doing this now for really more than 16 years, but I can say, you know, within this past 16 years, I've heard many situations and been involved in many cases and so forth and so on. And this is one of the reasons why it's so important as women. We really now step it up because it's filtering into this other generation, you know, those women who have children who have experienced this. Oftentimes this stuff filters out to those children and so forth and so on. We've got to stop it. I'm realistic and know that, again, this is not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen next year. It's not going to happen the following year. But at least we're going to do what it is that we feel we can do. At least we'll be able to tell this generation and the next generation that we did try to do whatever we could. We owe them that. We owe ourselves this. Our ancestors already paid some tremendous prices for us to be able to do some of the things that we need to do today. We as Baba Tommy Ture said very clearly, we must not fail our ancestors. My sister, I want you to take a breather for a moment, and we're going to open the lines. Mm-hmm. The chat room is going to be open in about 5 minutes, folks. We're almost ready for you. But we're going to open up the phone lines for right now as well. Caller, we're going to go to you. You're at 6100. We're going to bring you in. Our topic for tonight is focusing primarily on what we call ethnic engender violence and abuse. We are using these phrases and these words for some very specific reason, and that is because I'm taking my sisters into the UN and starting in March. I've been in the UN for a few years now, and I can tell you the representation for women of African descent from North America, particularly in the U.S., is the minimum at best, okay? Our voices are not up in there, and certainly not to any degree of reality. The research is not being presented. We're going to now do that. So, Carla, we're going to go to you. If you have a question or a comment for us tonight, we certainly appreciate it. Again, you're at 6100. Your mic is open. 6100. Okay, we'll move right on. We're going to go to caller 7940. Caller at 7940, did you have a comment or question? Okay. For some reason, people are pushing one, but then when I come to you, you're not saying nothing. Okay, no problem. Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to go
Hello?
Now to...
Hello? Hello?
Yes, 7940.
Yes, yes. I don't know what happened, but anyway, I wanted to say to the sister, you fit the description of a targeted individual, and there's many levels of it, but it seems like when one of the things targeted individuals go through, they seem like they have bad luck. People be placed in their lives, men or people, as we call them handlers. Somebody who's you placed in your life for different things to happen, and then the law don't seem to work for you. But I don't have the number for our conference, but I would like, if it's okay, that you connect up with Empress and she invites you over to our show and listen to what we talk about, and you see how familiarize things that you say that we talk about, because my targeting started when I was 14 and little things happened in your life, happened in my life, and later on I discovered I was a targeted individual, and I'll share that information with you later, but basically it's a government program, and it's like COINTELPRO mixed with different other things, and these people will be deliberately placed in your life to handle you, to cause you psychological mental disorders, so-called mental disorders, and then the system classify you as mentally ill. So when you go and talk to people, they have this stigma on your record and acting like these things that you are experiencing, that it's your fault or nobody is to believe you until you break loose and realize that it's nothing wrong with you and find out that it's strong people out there that will embrace you with the love and let you know that it is not your fault. But that's the way the technique of the situation, the targeted individual techniques are used on the target. So I would again like for you to contact Empress and for more information about our organization, and we have things to share with you. And I guarantee you, you can have some similar things that you fit right in with our women's group. Thank you for allowing me to share.
And thank you, Sister Amy. Sister Mecca, your response?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I've never been diagnosed with any type of mental health, but trust me, I've been through counseling, forgiveness, every case that I had open in counseling. I always sought counseling myself. No one ever recommended me to counseling. I've always started it, and they would always close up my cases. They would tell me, nothing is wrong with you. Whatever these men done to you, baby, you okay. Nothing is wrong. You're not bipolar. You're not schizophrenic. You don't suffer from nothing. I think one time they said adjustment disorder. When I got all my children back together, they said that I had to just adjust to having all my children back, because I always wanted to have all my children, because I know when I had my 16-year-old son, they wouldn't even let him come home from the hospital. I know when I was pregnant with my fourth, because of the abuse with my son's father. I know when I came home from the hospital when I had my daughter at 14, I know when I was pregnant at 14, I was in a maternity home where all young teenagers was in this home, and we were all pregnant. I remember that, and I left in 1 week because I didn't feel comfortable. I left. I saw myself. I told him I was. I'm out of here. I know at 19 I got pregnant again. My daughter was 3 months old at 19, and the state came and they took me to get an abortion, and that was like a form of eugenics because basically they told me I had to choose my welfare check over having another baby. So I'll never forget this white man coming to my house, picking me up, taking me to Englewood, New Jersey, and I got an abortion. And I'll never forget that experience of collapsing on the floor after the abortion. Getting in that white man's car, I was so sick. I was sick as a dog, and I told myself I would never do that shit again. And to this day, I regret it. I regret that white man, that caseworker, coming, picking me up, taking me to get an abortion. That's a form of eugenics, because how you going to tell me I got to choose my check over my child, and I feel like I didn't get that option. It was robbed from me, you know, and they had me to choose, you know, and that's what happened with that. And
See, this is why, again, family. Go ahead, sister.
Yeah,
go
but
ahead,
basically,
finish.
My mind. Yeah, no, but far as my mind, I'm cool. Like, I didn't lose it. Thank God. Thank God. I felt the breaking point, though. I know what it feels like when you get to that breaking point. Because I know when I couldn't take no more of the abuse of my son's father, and I know when in my mother's kitchen and got a knife, and when I saw him, I told my mom what I was going to do. I said, when I see him, I'm going to cut him. I'm going to try to kill him, Mom. She kept saying, no, you're not. You're not. She didn't believe me. And that was that breaking point, you know, and it was my first time ever being arrested, and it was my first time ever going to jail. I was 16, and I was in there for 2 weeks, and like I said, they banned me from the town, but my aunt came and got me, and I lived in Atlantic City with my aunt. But then my aunt and them said 3 weeks after that, he was gone. They said I was so, my mom and them said I was so rebellious, and I was just out there. I was a street. I was just in them streets, caught up in them streets. Just caught up in the streets. I loved the hood. I loved the streets. And, you know, I just got caught up. He taught me everything I knew. Nothing positive. We didn't have the dare to keep the kids off the drugs. So when he introduced me to drugs, I thought it was the right thing to do. So I'm 16, 17, 18, making $3,000 to $4,000 a night. You couldn't tell me nothing. I wasn't thinking about raising no babies. I was thinking about getting that fast money, living a good life, driving motorcycles, driving the fast cars. That was just the lifestyle that I chose, because that's all I knew was the street. I didn't know morals, values, self-esteem, love, and I thought everything was in a man. I thought it was just all about having a boyfriend. And then even when I had babies, I still did. I love my children. I knew that don't let them get sick, or if they get sick, take them to the doctor. But my mind wasn't on raising no children. My mind was on chasing the man in the street. Keeping it real with you, I was just chasing the guys. I wanted to be with the street. I wanted to be outside. I didn't want to listen to my mother. I didn't want to obey her rules. I didn't feel comfortable being home. I was a child. I felt like I was a black sheep of the family. I'm the darkest in my whole entire family, and that's something else that we got to deal with, you know, within our people. You know, I was always teased because I was dark. I never was accepted because I was dark-skinned. I was always mistreated by my friends and my family. Now... they love me. Everybody love me. Oh, you remind me so much of my daddy. And, oh, you're so beautiful. Oh, look at your skin. Oh, now I get attention from the whole world, even the foreigners. So moving from South Jersey at 19 to North Jersey, I didn't realize I had white straight teeth. I didn't realize that my skin was beautiful. White girls just always tell me, did you wear lipstick? You wear makeup? You are beautiful. It was white women that acknowledged my beauty. That's when I started. I was like, I used to tell them I am. I'm beautiful. And then Queen Latifah came out with Ladies First. Then that's when I really got the esteem. My esteem came from white women and Queen Latifah, Woman's First, Ladies First. Mm-hmm. And then I started hitting up New York, and then the brothers was trying to holler like, hey, what's up, Chocolate? So, you know, I grew up, I know it was the ancestors and the divine creator carrying me, because
I mean, most of my friends is dead. Everybody I grew up is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have easily chose drugs, prostitution. I could have just killed myself with all that abuse. And it was a lot. And it takes, you got to be strong to endure what I did. I know I'm a strong sister because all that trauma, all that abuse, they was breaking my bones pregnant. I didn't deserve that.
Mm-hmm.
And my son's father wrote my ex-fiance a 10-page letter and told him it was me. She didn't do anything to me. Because some brothers think, sometimes I open up and share when I'm dating my life story, and it's intimidating or it's scary to brothers, and they think of them, you know, like, well, shit, you might take that out on me. You got a lot of baggage, sis. No, I'm just sharing my life story with you. I would never take my baggage out on a new brother. That's not fair to him. You ain't do it. So I don't bring baggage to my new relationship. I forgave them. I forget. First, most importantly, you know what I had to do? I had to forgive myself. I forgave myself first. I forgave them. I forgave my mother. I had to go back to everybody that hurt me, that I allowed to hurt me, and I forgave them. I don't blame nobody. I don't blame. You know? I don't blame, and that's what kept me and got me through, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, family, I'm sure some of what you have heard tonight touch you somewhere, because some of you, if not all of you, can identify in some kind of way. I mean, we've covered a lot of bases here, a lot of area. And so, needless to say, this is a very complex situation and problem that we're dealing with. It's multifaceted. It is very complicated, but at the same time, we are who we are, which means we have the capabilities of dealing with it and coming through it. And that's what this dialogue is about. I mean, this sister has, as far as I'm concerned, put a lot of information out there and given quite a bit of clarity to some things that some of us were thinking, some of us know about, some of us have seen, some of us have experienced. But we get back to what are we going to do, and that's what this dialogue is also about, meaning that MWM, we've come up with some solutions, and we're going to begin to disclose some of them to you. It's not to say it's the all in all. We're not advocating that whatsoever, so we're not going to let anybody accuse us of saying, oh, y'all didn't do this, that. We can't do everything. We're not trying to do everything, but I can guarantee you we're going to get something done, and it will be effective, it will be substantial, and it will be on point. I've already asked Sister Becca to assist in establishing the Black Women's Defense League in the city that she's in. That's just one of the areas that the Black Women's Defense League deals with, and that is assisting and supporting our sisters who have already gone through these trials and tribulations, but also prevention. You see, because as the sister indicated, if there were other women in our lives to keep us stronger and to help nurture and all of that, it gives us the ability to fight back. It gives us the ability to have certain types of self-esteem. Sister indicated that it was Queen Latifah that, you know, helped to inspire her. I mean, we get inspiration from all different kind of ways. I can tell you that the first woman that told me I was beautiful was Nina Simone. And after that, hey, I was a handful. You couldn't do nothing with me. Simone told me I'm beautiful. Shoot. Man, I'm going to let somebody else tell me something else? Not going to happen. So I know the power of how a sister can empower another sister. And that's what we're talking about doing on an ongoing basis, establishing that nationwide, and really getting this work done. We're going to take one more call, and then we're going to bring in Dr. Randy Short, because I know he has quite a bit to share with us. And, again, we thank him for connecting Sister Mecca and myself. He's connected me with so many wonderful people. And this sister, again, is a perfect example. We're going to take one more call, and then we're going to go to Dr. Randy Short. Caller, you're at 6029. We certainly appreciate you tonight, and welcome your call and your comment and or question. 6029.
Peace, sister.
Peace to you.
Okay, listen, you guys, your ladies are taking me, sisters are taking me back. When I heard Queen Latifah ladies first, I was in Kenya, East Africa. I was at a club, and I listened to the big video, you know, and everybody dancing to the music and, you know, appreciating the lyrics. And, you know, so you took me back. When you talk about Nina Simone, you talk about three women, and, it's, and
yes.
you know, back in the university days, you know, my skin is black, you know, my back is strong. You know, it takes me back, you know.
Yes.
So
yes.
I appreciate that. But let me just run something by you, though, in terms of mental ailment in the United States. It seems to me that when you think about mental ailments, essentially what you're talking about is at some point people get to a breaking point where they actually split in terms of how they perceive themselves and what their objective realities are. So I think that in the context of America, I think anybody who's not a rebel has to be sick. I think in terms of mental ailments, I think it's very pervasive in society. Think about it. If you live in a country which tells you that your worth is based upon your material possessions, if you don't have any material possessions, then how do you see yourself? All you can do one of two things. You can fight against it, which rebels do, and say, proclaim, you know, your humanity, or you can accept it. And accepting it, you got to be sick in order to accept someone telling you that you're less than human. So I think this whole thing in terms of mental illness, I think it's a very slick game. I think psychologists, psychiatrists play a very slick game in terms of, you know, in effect, legitimizing the system and not looking at the system for what it is. So that's not to say that all psychologists or psychiatrists do that. I think Dr. Naeem Akbar does a very good job in terms of talking about the social-political reality, socio-economic reality that people are confronted with and their response to that. I think he does a very good job in terms of laying out that if you're not a rebel, then there's a problem. I think that's when the true illness comes in. It's when you accept things and what you know in your heart of hearts are not correct, but you accept them anyway. I think that's when the sickness comes in. If you understand that they're not correct, then you fight against it. That's what a healthy person does. And so I think what happens is that in terms of being a reality, that we have to have institutions in the community in terms of keeping each other strong. So when we have these feelings in terms of, you know, anger, these feelings in terms of resentment, these feelings in terms of or feeling like you're being marginalized, that you have people to encourage you to, despite all that, to continue, but understanding that these are objective realities, but in spite of it all, we have to continue because we do have a responsibility not only to our ancestors, but we have a responsibility to our young people. So I just called to say that this nonsense about, you know, blaming people, calling people crazy because they're responding to the insanity that pervades society, I think it's something that we seriously have to look at. I looked at a report recently, and they estimated probably about 85% of the American people are, in fact, in terms of DSM, schizophrenic. And the DSM is whole nonsense in terms of how you define mental illness, in terms of this book that the psychologists and psychiatrists use. So they predict in a study, they talk about 85% of the people in this country are schizophrenic, and that sounds right to me. You have to be. You can't live in this kind of society, which is crazy as it is, which does everything it does to debase human beings, which does everything it does to instill inferiority complex in people, to try to condition people to accept the way to accept their marginalization and victimization. And so you got to be a rebel, and if you're a rebel, that tells me that you're fighting back. If you go along with it, then that tells me that you become a victim of the system. So that's what I want to say, and I just want to tell the sister, hang in there. You know, and it's good to see her stories that she's hanging strong. So just hang in there, so we all support her. And thanks for letting me talk.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate what
thank
you just
you.
Said and appreciate you. All right. Excellent comments and statements from all of you. Thank you so much. Okay, we are now going to go to our live line again, and we still have Sister Mecca here with us, and this is a wonderful conversation, a wonderful dialogue. I'm feeling it. I know you all are, and it's in the proper context. It's the way it should be. This is what we've been talking about, to be able to discuss these matters in a way where we are family. We are a community, no matter where you're at. What was it that Peter Tosh said? No matter where you come from, as long as you're a black man. poor woman, you're an African. So, you know, it is what it is. We do this with love. We do this with intent of resolution. And one thing that Sister Mecca said before we bring Dr. Wendy Short in, and I want to remind everyone, the Million Woman March had a theme. Its theme was the three R's. The three R's stood for repentance, resurrection, and restoration. Repentance was not in the context of how, you know, most churches or religions do. Repentance was, as the sister pointed out, and she didn't know this prior to me saying it because we didn't discuss it, but the repentance was forgiving yourself. The repentance was forgiving yourself and us as a people for what we allowed in some regards to happen. It wasn't about, you know, something in the sky or, you know, this other kind of theories and whatever. It was about looking at yourself and learning to forgive yourself for what one might call mistakes or bad decisions or things of that nature. Because we knew then that in order for us to heal, we have to be able to look at life in such a way that, hey, stuff happens. You're not going to escape that. You ain't going through none of this and stuff don't happen. And some of that stuff is going to be painful, and some of that stuff is going to be problematic, and some of that stuff you did. But that don't mean you got to suffer and hold that on yourself forever. So that's what the Million Woman March and movement is about. Yes, accepting the responsibility of what you may have done, but also knowing that at some point you don't have to be Jesus. You don't have to have that cross on your back. Moving right along, we're going to open up our live line again, and joining us now is our brother, Dr. Randy Short, and we still have Sister Mecca with us as well, and so we're going to really do this thing up pretty nicely as we proceed. My brother, do we have you?
Yes. How are you, sister? And of course, I'm respect good. And love to
hey. Greetings, Brother Randy. How are you?
Yeah, how are you? Forgive me. I left a message. The great Eddie Willis of Motown called when we were on the phone earlier. And,
oh, okay.
If you've ever heard the way you do the things you do, and you just keep me hanging on the guitar riffs, well, that's the man. And he's the most prolific guitar player in the history of recorded sound, and I thought there may have been a problem. You're so powerful, sister. They knocked out my my internet and my Wi-Fi, so I couldn't call you back. So
wow.
Whatever it is you got, sister, just like this show, it knocked my phone out. I just had to turn my phone off for 2 hours and. So, you know, I hope you don't do this to other people's phones. That's probably why they're not calling in. they're responding, but
it happens a lot, though, with these shows. It happens when I come on and start talking. They be dropping calls. They be dropping the show. They be like, Michael, what is your energy?
The power of truth, the power of forgiveness,
yeah.
The power of redemption, the power of healing is very important. I wanted to throw something out there because it's in my lane. Two things, just a little bit in my lane. First and foremost, I want to just say to brothers, because a lot of them are partners in the abuse. I'm not talking about the actual hitting. It's having to see it happen to your mother or your sister or your aunt or your grandmother. A lot. There are millions of black men who are traumatized by violence, and I can recall the first time I saw a black man assault a black woman. I was 3 or 4 years old, and I watched a man beat a black woman to her face while she was pregnant when on the corner of 5th and 8th Streets, Northeast Washington, D.C., summer 1969, 68, one of the 2 years, and I still can't forget it. And I watched him beat her, and no one, he beat her publicly. Nobody helped her. I still can't believe that. I mean, I'm almost 50, and I just recall that, and
I mean, he's beating a pregnant woman. She was a teenager. She was a teenager. He was possibly her pimp or something like that. He had gotten this girl strung out on heroin when she was young and got her pregnant. I guess he's mad she was pregnant. Maybe she didn't get an abortion or something. And he beat her and he threatened to kill her, and he did kill her later. And I still, my question as a 3 or 4 year old, why didn't somebody help her? Why? I mean, he was bigger than her. He was stronger than her. She couldn't get away. She was pregnant. In fact, my understanding is whoever it was shot her and killed her and the baby. And I can recall feeling helpless and just seeing it. And there are people who are black men who couldn't do anything, who felt helpless. And part of black men are going to have to get out of this concept of our strength being based on individualism. Our strength comes in our corporate unity. That's why when you ever get 2 or 3 black men together, the police show up. They're afraid we're going to have a real conversation. Okay, so we've got to get out of this. I shouldn't have to, at 2 or 3 or 4 years old, be able to defend a grown woman from a grown black man. There should have been a group of black men to deal with this guy. You follow? We need each other. We need to come together as black men and say, we're not going to take this crap off of anyone.
That's right.
The beginning of being whole, is that we'll no longer accept this kind of treatment. Having said that, I always push this, not because I'm going to join, because everybody knows I love Jesus. However, every now and then you'll find one of the offbeat groups that has some good information. Don't join. Save your money. And in fact, my approach to most religions is I'm on the Herman Cain plan. If I went in with $10, I'm coming out with $9.99. That's what you're going to get from me. Okay? But the Church of Scientology, which is trying to get inroads in the black community, yes, they are. Everybody's trying to get in there. The Koreans and everybody else is there. They know there's gold in their heels because we won't give it to each other. But they've got some good stuff on psychiatry. They've got, in fact, if whenever I come up to Philly, Sister Empress, if you want, I'm going to bring some of the stuff. And, you know, we'll take a miniature donation or something, but you can take it home. But the DSM is a fraud. Since that brother mentioned DSM, he also said they were bogus. And the DSM is going, the next thing the DSM is going to do is tell folks pedophilia is okay. And I want to preface that with a black principal who sodomized this child and raped this child down in North Carolina, down in Fayetteville. Black principal, 49 years old, molested at least 4 boys. And the last time he did it, the boy's mama or guardian was sitting in the waiting area when he did it. So it's women and children. So this defense thing is needed. I always want to remind people the original group, one of the most important groups, the premier group that ended up being a coalition called the Urban League, was a thing for the protection of, I forget, something, Organization for the Protection of Negro Women, something like that. People understood this, and in 1906, that black women needed to be protected, and it was a men's group, okay? So we others were falling off the wagon in terms of protecting our women. In 1906, black men got together to fight anybody that they had to in the city of New York. That's, what, 100 and what, 7 years ago? So we need a male section to partner with this, Sister Mecca, because we're going to defend our women. And no, I ain't a tough guy. I'm a house boy, a preacher's kid. But maybe I can use my brain as a weapon of warfare against injustice and abuse. And we need to be looking like this. So, no, you don't have to be the toughest person in the world, but you can stop abuse. You can stop that. You know, I woke up on my birthday in 1991, and this white pimp was beating the hell out of a woman. That's how I woke up, hearing the woman bounce off the wall. I called the police so much I wasn't going to get down. That's the white woman. I was thinking, that's the white thing, but I'm still going to call because I know if they're going to be the white woman, they're going to kill a black woman. So I'm going to just call the police and tell somebody he had to move out because if I thought he was going to hit the woman downstairs, I'm going to call the police. We can simply say no, let the people with the guns do this, but we can do better than that. Now, I want to just remind people there's a good film called Psychiatry, An Industry of Death. It's online, and it'll show anybody that the origin of psychiatry is about, in particular, destroying the mentality of the minds of black people. Not the good folks like Amos Wilson and Naeem Akbar. Those are the heroes, Nathan Hare. But white psychiatry is another way of saying white supremacy. Psychiatrists organized the Holocaust of blacks, not just in Germany, but some of them were used to kill blacks down in Namibia before they even had concentration camps for white people. So we know that these folks are the enemy, these folks are pushing drugs, and these same psychiatrists who are classifying black people all over the country as schizophrenic. It's something that happened to my great-grandmother who spoke our language. My folks are Native American and black, and some of the Native Americans were black people before white people got here. They found that out when they did the testing on the bones down in Jamestown in 2006, 2007. They're trying to figure out how all the black people were around the white folks in Jamestown. Pardon my language, they're silly asses, because we were always here. And so my grandmother, because she could speak the language, when she would talk to herself or say something, they said she's schizophrenic instead of the fact that she had managed after the genocide that Captain John Smith, who raped Pocahontas, when he came up here and started killing my people, just a handful of folks had been able to hold on to the language. And what did they do? Instead of saying, wow, you preserved the dying language, be you crazy. You understand what I'm saying? And so these folks are not to be trusted. We've got to have our own way to address the abuse. And these same psychiatrists that are racist, who helped come up with eugenics and everything else to kill people, are the same ones pushing all this heathenism in the schools and all, teaching these boys and girls whatever crosses your mind is what you're supposed to do. You're going to turn around and do what you've been taught is okay, right? Then all of a sudden you're going to tell them it's deviant. And talk to your mother or father that's born in 58 looking, and you'll find that they're pushing deviants and calling that education. All of this is part of what they want to do through the DSM, where they're going to lower the age of consent down to 5 or 6 years old. That's the kind of stuff that they want to do, and that's just, you know, that's good science, which is bogus. But coming back to this sister, I don't know why I'm here to use it. I don't know if Gambling Huff is trying to get royalties or whatever. But there's
You're starting to break up a little, brother.
I'm sorry. There's some music I'm hearing, like Philadelphia and the Nashville music or something. Can you hear it?
Well, I'm playing something in the background, but it's not Philadelphia and the Nashville.
I don't know what this, but let me keep going. I just want to say this, that Sister Mecca and all you sisters, we really need to organize a public education program. Along with the defense, we must educate people to know why they should fight, why they're fighting, and why folks should join. And that's what I'm saying. I'm looking forward to Sister Mecca getting with a group of women that I've introduced her to, where we're going to begin to try to do programs with another blog show, because this sister is a survivor. We need to teach women about their resiliency, in particular because you've got to be able to move forward and get beyond. I meet so many sisters that are trapped, and their mama got hit by their father, their grandfather beat up their grandmother, and they go through life hating all black men. Everybody black male is on the hit list. And that poison gets passed, and it incites more and more of this stuff to happen. What we have to get to the point of is having our little black Jewish attitude, never again. And it's possible for us to do that.
forgive me if I'm sounding up. There's a lot of noise that I'm hearing through this thing.
Okay. Well, I certainly agree, my brother, and just so you know, the Black Women's Defense League is really, again, it's multifaceted. It not only deals with self-defense, you know, physically, as I explained to Sister Mecca, our focus is holistic, and therefore it's mental, spiritual, and physical. And it is about prevention as well as support. So it's you know, really a lot of areas that we are covering. And, of course, there is a brothers and support component that is available for Black men. And, again, not just to support the sisters, but also to be there for some of these sisters' male children, you see. So, you know, again, what we're talking about developing is to address a wide range of things that we know are attached to this whole issue and this whole problem. So, again, we're ready to launch it now. We're ready to come to your city. Those of you who are interested in having myself, Dr. Randy Short, and other representatives from our group, we are ready to come now to do not only training, but to provide you with information and to now document in your city. We want to look at the number of rapes, the number of murders, the number of molestations, and et cetera, that have been reported in your city. This is the work that we're now doing. We want to document. We want to look at the statistics. Because I already know. I've already started this process for the past 5 years. That's why we knew we had to begin a national campaign so that we could be the ones who had our own information. There are a lot of groups out there, predominantly white, who go all over the country collecting statistics. Who is representing us? Where is our think tanks? Where are our people to do the research that we need to have done in order to provide the reports that we need to have? Well, now we're it, because we know that there are none out there, and we had to do that. So our mission now in putting forward the national campaign for the elimination of violence and abuse of women and girls of African descent, again, we want to now look at the data. We want to now see, and we know, of course, that there are many cases that are not reported. We know that. But it behooves us to know of the ones that are reported. We need to look at the age group. We need to look at the whole scheme of it, because that will help us to further identify the solutions that we need to now bring forward. So, again, we encourage all of you, if you already have a group, maybe you're working on this issue or a similar issue, well, now we have an entity that is available for you to assist you, or if you just need a group of folks, representatives or whatever, to just deal with this issue, we're now ready to do that as well. Now, Sister Amy called in earlier, and she talked about the targeted individuals. This is another group that's coming now under the Men and Women Movement Human Rights Commission. And note, ours is not just a HR commission. Let me just add that on. Actually, ours is an HR plus N commission. And why? Because we're in the 21st century. So what that means is you grow and develop. Well, most folks talk about human rights, and so they should. It's certainly an advancement to just talking about civil rights. Well, the Men and Women Movement has taken it a step further, and ours is human rights and natural rights. Why? Well, read the Constitution. You'll get your first clue. The Constitution doesn't say human rights are inalienable. It doesn't say that. It says your natural rights, okay, or at least alludes to that. So the bottom line is we now have to begin to fight in a way where the language represents what we know is true. We all have natural rights, okay? That's undeniable. We must assert it. And so this, again, is what the Men and Women Movement is about. We've been talking to and with Dr. Randy Short and, of course, Sister Mecca. We've been talking about the issue of what we call ethnic and gender-related violations. And, again, we say ethnic because here in the U.S., women of African descent are violated by this government because you are of African descent, or because we are of African descent. The statistics show that very clearly. Sister Mecca has conveyed earlier that she has, too, been the victim of eugenics. That ethnic folk, of course, we've talked with or talked about Elaine Riddick, that ethnic folk. So these are areas that other women cannot say or charge. They just can't. The so-called indigenous women or Indian or Native Indian women, some of them can. But that's the only other group that come anywhere close to talking about issues such as we. So the bottom line is, will you all support? And if so, how and when? Okay, I'm making a lot of noise in the background, but I'm going to have to mute you in a minute if you continue. But at any rate, I just want to remind everyone that the national campaign officially goes underway starting next Friday. We are going to begin the preliminary steps in holding our national rally, We Shall Genocide. So this is the first step. We are now focusing on holding the major rally in May, right around Mother's Day. Okay, so we'll tell you more about that as we proceed. Sister Mecca, let's go back to you for a few moments. What are some of the things that you feel we need to begin to do in addressing this issue, be it about prevention, be it about support? What are some of the things that you think we should begin to do?
Definitely defend. So sisters learning how to defend themselves. Self-esteem. My thing was not loving myself, not getting the strength to leave. You know, why do we stay? Why do we get to the root cause of why do women stay in abusive relationships? Having a plan to escape the fence, an escape plan, knowing the triggers, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is
mm-hmm.
Mainly defense. I've been saying this for the last couple of years. I want to start a defense program for women, young
mm-hmm.
women and women. And here,
right.
And then Randy linked me up with you, and it's like, okay, it's just coming together. It's all coming together.
All right.
And I've also learned that, you know, I don't have to start my own program. I could just join a sister that's about action and proactive and you're doing the work. I could just join in on what you started. I don't have to, you
that's
know, I'm not hung
right.
up on title and ego, you know, but as long as I get behind a strong sister, I'm a strong sister, and, you know, we're going to attract more strong sisters that's ready, you know, to do the work. Because, you know, human trafficking is real here in Atlanta. We just had
right,
an assembly. We have an assembly every 3 months in Atlanta, and the assembly that we had last weekend was on youth, the youth focusing on the youth. And brothers and sisters was on the panel speaking on child trafficking. It's
mm-hmm.
really serious. Child trafficking in Atlanta is real. And now when you go out to the clubs, now they're putting, you got to be careful now because brothers are putting Mickey's in women's drinks, putting them in their trunks, and then women is being sold as slaves out in other states in America. It's
yes,
a big thing here in Atlanta. It's a big thing here in Atlanta.
And in Oregon, I mean, it's not just the big communities. In the state of Oregon, black women comprise 25% of the persons trafficked. In a state with precious few black people, 25%,
yeah.
And high all over. And there's something else you got to put on the table because it's linked. You mentioned the mollies and the drugs. It
mm-hmm.
all goes to. We want to keep focused on those sisters. We really need to. It's part of a defense movement. When you've got all these artists singing about abusing women and singing
mm-hmm.
about drugs and shut people's minds down and telling people in code how to do this, we must change the music culture. It's almost as if it's the voice of genocide for our people, the music that's encouraging. I'm not saying it is 100%, but it's a significant part of the message being fed to people
And that's part of the defense. The other thing is, I'm hoping we're looking, and I know that you are, because I'm talking with Empress on here. Now, Sister Empress, Queen, I put all the titles in there. And I'm going to call her Commander, because, you know, she's like five-star general, Commander-in-Chief of the movement to rescue our sisters. You know, we need to have something like a legal shield that we can use as a business. Not so much because we're into money. Imagine if this sister had been able, for a moderate amount of money, maybe $10 a month, if she was in this defense thing, she'd have a legal badge or a legal shield.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and imagine if that means the minute you have a problem, you could call a number or go to a website or put in a PIN number, and civil protection, you name it, child support, all of these things. There's a Black Women's Legal Aid Center and Defense. So if you're in Atlanta, if you're in Charlotte, wherever you are, mm-hmm. there is a attorney, a woman of color, or a competent person until we can get a person mm-hmm. of color. We already had that mm-hmm. white lawyer on this show. I remember that. We have that because there are plenty of unemployed lawyers all over this country, many
right.
of them Black. We could systematically employ them, work with them to pass the bar. So that means they have to give us so many hours or so much time. That means if you called in, if you didn't have one penny, sister, they call an 800 number, and they'd reach out to you, and you go, oh, there's a Black woman's defense line. Oh, really? Well, who has pro bono in your area? And you could dispatch someone, and that law firm better do it. You follow them? We can do this. All of the movements, I need to remind people, the NAACP, the National Association for Asking Caucasian Permission, the National Association for the Abortion of Colored People, whichever one you want to call them, it's still the same thing. The Niagara Movement preceded them. All these Black folks had movements that were doing very sophisticated things on a shoestring that got hijacked by Zionist money. Somebody say amen. We knew how to do this before anybody. I mean, they make it seem as if this abolitionist movement, most folks don't realize most Black folks were buying the Liberator. William Lloyd Garrison's mm-hmm. paper was bought by white people. White folks don't want to see us free. Black people were raising money in the 1820s and 30s and 40s, in particular the main place in the country, was the city of Philadelphia, the most sophisticated community of Black people of its kind worldwide. We showed them how to do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, they've
mm-hmm.
got the money and they've got the snitches, but we are more sophisticated in fighting for our freedom than anyone else. And everybody copies us. We need
mm-hmm.
to be back in front of thinking of innovative ways, like you have apps for your phone. There should be an app, a Black woman app. Let's do this. And you pay about like $5, and you get an app, and everything you need to tap into as a sister is done. The science
mm-hmm.
exists.
Mm-hmm.
The capacity exists, because I know a computer programmer. She's Indian, but she considers herself Black. This stuff is at our fingertips if we only imagine it so. There's a book called The People That Could Fly.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
fly.
I remember.
If we imagine... See, I talked to you, Sister Mecca, for the second. The first thing is, I'm going to call too late. I know what to do with you. We only have to start imagining what a free community would be, what a safe community would be, what healthy men and women could be, and come together and organize the strategies to see that this is implemented.
Yes.
And I'm convinced, so along with the self-defense, legal education, we need to make certain that these sisters can read. People can't
mm-hmm.
read when they can't read to go to court. I was putting up on Facebook today, these two Black men down in Florida about 8, 9, or 7, 8 years ago tricked the people into thinking that these folks who were supposed to be in jail for life terms, that they were free. They got off of death row or something, and they can't find them. And I put it up, I'm not for murderers, but I got to say, these brothers, because they could read, write, and think, tricked the whole state of Florida to let them out. I was thinking, God, if Herman Wallace had been smarter, maybe some of them could have tricked and gotten out. So we need to make certain that these folks can read, can write, can debate. And I mean, we're talking about a whole academy from beginning to end, as well as that they have skill sets where they can be self-supporting. Because I know that the National Million Women's Movement wants to have businesses, entrepreneurial pursuits. So even defense, part of why they stay with the man is they don't know how they're going to feed their kids. Part of why they want to make certain that their kids have a role model, something like that. You know, I mean, I choose nobody's role model, but we don't think about that, right, when you're trying to get your kids a daddy.
Right.
If we can empower them with the source of income, empower them with some skills, some skills. For instance, I have a sister who is a granddaughter of Mandela, and her hands, a man took her hands and put in a door and tried to break her hands. I mean, her hands still have the scars in it. But this woman is a master builder. So, I mean, she's a master builder. She has her own company. It's all male. She runs it. She owns it. This sister or someone like that could come here, she's a contractor, and teach us how to build houses and alternative safe houses for women. You follow what I'm saying? And I have a friend.
One of the things that is within our five-year action plan is, and again, this is why it's so important that we start getting into some of these cities, because we need to make this assessment. This is what we've been doing in Philly. We've been looking very closely at the vacant properties in Philly. And, of course, in Philadelphia, we're talking about approximately 44,000 right about now. So our position is, once we are organized, because that's what it really will take, because if not, the infiltrators or other things will happen that tear it apart. Once we are organized to the degree that we want to be, and we're just about there now, we can begin to obtain some of these properties and not, you know, go through the rigmarole that a lot of these people are sending people through, because the fact of the matter is a lot of these developers are getting properties for next to nothing. And so being organized, having a clear direction, we are going to get some of these properties. And just as you just mentioned, Brother Andy, the objective is to have safe houses, to have what we call sister sanctuaries, to have sister spaces and places. These would be ideal settings to not only keep our sisters safe, but also to help to nurture. And then the component or the adjoining component is something that we call our little sisters. We are developing a little later on here in Philly something called Fumi House. Fumi House is a house or a facility for girls. For girls at risk, for young girls. Now, Sister Mecca gave a perfect example of some things that I have already had the opportunity to experience, and that is several young sisters who did not want to be at home for whatever reason. Young girls go through that. They don't want to be at home with their mamas. And, you know, we need to know that that's a reality. But we used to have a sister here in Philly. Her name was Fumi, and she had a house. And a lot of the youth, and for her it was male or female, if they were having problems with the parent, they could go to Fumi's house and stay for a couple of days, talk with her, chill out or whatever. And many of the parents loved her, they respected her, and they would allow the children to go there. Some of them she'd get for months. So we knew this sister. She is now passed. She made transition. She didn't have any children. She couldn't have any children. And so she loved children. And this is what we want to do in memory of her. We're going to open a Fumi's house and hopefully take that nationwide. Again, we have many young girls who are out on the street. Where do they go? Where can they go? We don't want them going to the system. We don't want them out on the street. So sisters, women, our women, we are the ones that have to stand up and take some responsibility for these young girls. So we're talking about saving our daughters. Lastly, but not really lastly, you both mentioned two or three very powerful black psychiatrists, psychologists. You know, of course, Dr. Nathan Hare, of course, Naeem Akbar. And I'm going to put two others out there for those who may not be familiar with these names, because they, too, have some great work. And that is Dr. Frances Cress Welty and certainly Dr. Julia Hare, both
and join the group.
Profound psychiatrists or psychologists. So, you know, we have people who have provided us and are providing us with more than ample information, ammunition to really do the work that we to do, and we need to be more responsible now in also helping to bring forward some of these young folks that are now in the field studying training. We need to make sure they don't get lost in the sauce and get caught up. We need to be embracing them, bringing them into the community, putting them to work, letting them do their apprenticeship at our facilities. So this, too, is what the Me Women's Movement and the Black Women's Defense League is about. And, you know, and again, these are some things we're going to start revealing and conveying to you more because now is the time. And, again, you in particular will support this movement. There's never been a movement for women of African descent, never, at least that we know of. This is not a sorority. This is not a, like Brother Randy said, it's not NAACP, no kind of way, shape, fashion, or form. We don't get grants. We don't get corporate sponsoring. So that should tell you also the right thing.
And we don't have people with sex scandals running out organizations and having to retire or resign all the time. I thank God that you've got some character, sisters. Isn't that beautiful to have character, good leadership, folks needing to step down, spend more time with their family? Who wants to leave a $400,000 a year job because they got a six-year-old? If you believe that, then you think the Indians got a good deal for Manhattan. Okay? Believe that.
No, that's right.
Wow. Sister Empress, I wanted to just add to that. I'm a part of work with an organization here in Atlanta called the People United Foundation, PUF.com, and you can see we have a program where we teach people in the community to be leaders and entrepreneurs, and we educate them in the fields of agriculture, science. It's a grassroots organization, and when Randy had mentioned some of the programs that we could add here, I just thought of some of the ones that I'm already helping out with that I could implement into, you know, because I have a lot of programs that I completed with the state of New Jersey, and I asked them, I begged the instructor, can I please take this program, because I always knew that I would be a part of an organization or that I was going to start my own organization. So I took a lot of programs from the state of New Jersey, such as like financial literacy, hygiene, self-improvement programs to help sisters, you know, start from the bottom. Also, what else I want to say? When I moved to Jersey City and if it wasn't for Jersey City, I don't know where I would be moving up north to Jersey City, because I went to college. I was throwing parties out of my home, and the sister sent me down, my neighbor, and she told me what financial aid was, because I made it to the 10th grade. I was going through so much with my son's father that I thought I made it to the 9th grade, but when I pulled my when I started backtracking my life, and I asked Wawa High School to send me my transcripts, I made it to the first semester of 10th grade. And, you know, your past never leaves you. It teaches you how to deal with your future to make better choices in your future. Of course, when I ordered my transcript, what do you see at the bottom on a nurse? The beat up by a boyfriend. You know, so that followed me even in my school records. So this just sat me down, talked to me. I didn't know what financial aid was. She told me what it was, and I went to Hudson Community College. They let me take a GED equivalent test, and I'm working on my master's right now. I'm a living walking testimony. I don't have a GED. I don't have a high school diploma, but I got two college degrees, and I'm working on my master's right now. Okay,
all right.
So for the sisters that feel like there's no hope for them, there is hope for you. You don't have to stay there where you was in the past. You know, I got my life together, and I mean, this is my story. I overcame all of that tragedy and all of that trauma. I could have chose drugs. I could have chose to kill myself, but I chose to go to college, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm
mm-hmm.
here to help women that feel as though they can't do it. And I also would beg my professors, can I please take my bring my children into class with me? Because I didn't have any family in Jersey City. I moved up there only knowing one woman, and she died of HIV. Okay, that's another story to my book, you know. And, you know, the rest is like, I mean, it's just more to say, but, you know, I'll leave that for the autobiography inspirational book that I'm writing about my life. But it's just so much more, you know, and it ends with success. It starts with tragedy, trauma, and it ends in success. So, and I work with a lot of different artists. I've written songs for many artists, you know, and it's like, you know, I never let all that trauma, all that abuse stop me. I was always a rebellious type person, and I always would go, even though they tried to kill me, even though, you know, people, you know, looked down at me because I was dark or put me down, I always kept going. I always kept going. I always kept going, you know.
Right. Well, family, as you can hear, many of us often go through trials and tribulations, but what you are hearing tonight is that, you know, we can rise, we can persevere and certainly move forward, and that's what it is that we must now do. And now also be more supportive to one another. It's not to say that you can't do it on own, many have, but it also is, we've got to start showing some examples, and some of those examples have to be what some call unity and what others call solidarity, but whatever you call it, we've got to begin to exhibit it and to live it a bit more. So we hope that tonight's program has been again, enlightening to you and certainly inspirational, but also, as I often say, motivational, because we want you to do something. If you aren't doing what you feel you should be doing, and certainly many of you know that, and certainly many of you are doing things, but look at what's going on today. Obviously, we've got to do more. We've got to step it up, and we can. We remind you again that on Friday, October the 25th, starting at 12 o'clock, we're going to go to the Justice Department. We will begin the process of giving the Justice Department people folks complaints. So if you have a complaint about a violation, particularly that the government has done upon you, your family, et cetera. It could be the direct government, meaning federal. It could be local government, meaning the police. It could be on a job, discrimination. We want you to bring it so we can begin to compile these various types of complaints so that we can now take this stuff to other courts. So, sisters in particular, if you are a victim of eugenics, we want to talk with you. We want to help put your complaint together if you haven't already. We want to look at the feasibility of filing class action suits if necessary, along with individual suits. But the point being, if you've been harassed by police, if you've been beaten by the police, anything that's relevant to the violation of your rights, we want to now formally give this government not only a run for their money, but we want to kick their behind, and we can. So, Friday at the Justice Department, we begin this process. We now kind of focus on putting the main rally in May. That gives us a good weather, more, you know, nicer weather, but it also gives us more time to organize nationwide. We're going to put a call out to the National in Cobra. We're going to put a call out to the National Black United Front. We're going to put a call out to the Nation of Islam. We're going to put a call out to all of the various black organizations that say they are about justice, that say they are about reparations, that say they are about getting rid of the prison industrialized complex. We hope that you will support the Rally for Justice, We Charge Genocide. We made some cards and sent some invitations out already. unfortunately, we did not hear back from them. So we're going to try again. And with that said, we're going to do it both verbally and formally. The various groups and organizations, we need your support. We need to speak out for our political prisoners. We need to make certain we continue hands off ASADA. So we're saying May 2014, we hope that you will support the Rally for Justice. Dr. Randy Shaw, what do you think about that?
Well, I was glad because ASADA was in my spirit. In fact, I was telling Sister Mecca that I had an argument with someone on Facebook over ASADA because someone put her in a group with Kathleen Cleaver and Erica Huggins, and I basically said, you know, ASADA Shakur can stand by herself.
Yeah,
and so
absolutely.
I was thinking about this defense fund and group should be fighting for the women prisoners, political prisoners,
right.
And also people that are in exile because she is, if truth be told, the number one targeted woman on the face of this earth is ASADA Shakur, targeted by the most wicked, dirty, filthy, despicable, satanic government that's ever existed. I'm talking about this one we've got here that targets a black grandmother in her late 60s for assassination. Who's more wicked than someone that hates a grandmother? You know, walk around angry about what happened with Betty Shabazz years afterwards for a child making a mistake, if that's in fact the case, but will forgive a government that will put a $2 million price tag on the head of a sainted sister like ASADA. So, yes, and we know that these organizations, a lot of them are about the Benjamins, and everybody knows Benjamin Franklin was a pedophile, a child molester, into necrophiliac. He was a necrophiliac. He was Hellfire Club, and he even had all those bodies of people once he got finished with them under the floorboards of his house. And yet it's all about the Benjamins. And I bet you some of those people were black that he killed off. Remember I mentioned that Benjamin Franklin thought there were too many black people. Maybe he got rid of a few, like the one that was flying the kite. He was trying to get electrocuted, looking for electricity when he already knew it was there.
Well, indeed. And just so folks know, our estimated date for the rally that we're focusing on now for May would be May the 3rd. And, again, it ties right into several things. It puts us right before Mother's Day because, or, you know, a few days or so before Mother's Day because, again, we're focusing on the mother of civilization. When we charge genocide, it's to charge genocide for all of our people, but it is sisters who are going to be leading this charge. And it also puts us right before the time period when, of course, the situation with Sister ASADA. So, you know, it gives us a little more time to really do the national coordination that we need to do, but we will begin this process on October 25th, marking the 16-year anniversary of the largest gathering in the world, the Million Woman March, and now its universal movement. Lastly, I want to remind everyone that in December we are planning to go to Cuba for our educational cultural visit, and we will have Brother Lee on next week to tell you more about that because we are planning to go, I think, the last week in December. Again, the Million Women Movement is an international movement, and even though our work primarily will focus on North America presently within the next 5 years, certainly we are planning to go to the diaspora, throughout the diaspora. On October 25th through November the 3rd, we will, in fact, hold Million Women March Week. That really starts on the 27th, but the 25th is our actual anniversary date. And on the 27th, we will begin unveiling the 5-year action plan and black print. It will also unveil what we're going to do next year. And I can't go into details right now, but we're on the move, as they say. We're taking our movement globally. So, Donata, give us your closing words for tonight because we're almost out of time.
Oh, okay. Well, I hope everyone enjoyed the show and me sharing my experiences with everyone. And I'm here for the sisters and the brothers, but if you need me, you can reach me through Empress or Brother Randy to speak at any engagements or, you know, just for support.
or if you need me to come and speak to you, to the young sisters or sisters that, you know, that just need the support, I'm here.
All we need to do a fundraiser together because you sing, I can sing with you. We can be Tammy Terrell and be after James Brown, who we know was beating her down. I could be Marvin, since his grandfather and his brother were my family friends. And you can be Tammy, since you'd be up in Philly. And so duet. That would be fun.
Empress will write the song. She's going to write the songs, Randy.
That's right. Right. You know, I don't believe I've ever told Brother Randy that I am a writer.
I'm a lyricist. I write with Denise LaSalle, so, you know, at least I've done once. So I'm a lyricist. I always wanted to be like Eddie Holland, who used to write for all the girl groups. That's just me.
Yes, I am also. I was once hired by Philly International years ago, which I never really tell that story, but it is true. Again, once, seeing the music industry, I decided, nah, I don't think so, but I do have the skills, as they say. So
we're going to have to write a national anthem for the sisters then now. We have a Lift Every Voice, so we're going to need our sisters' national anthem, sis. We're going to need that.
Yes. Absolutely. Oh, I like that. All right, my sister, well, I'm going to be heading to Atlanta very, very soon because we've got work to do. We've got a movement to build. I've already talked to a couple of the brothers that I know in the area, and one of the things that we want to start working on is holding some human rights forums so that we can address folks about what is it? What is that about? And connecting that, of course, to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So, you know, we want to begin coming to Atlanta and other areas to have that discussion and how we can use that. Because it is a tool, as Dr. Randy Short has often said, you know, there have been others who have gone that route already, but who's going to do it in the 21st century? Well, we are. We know that Paul Robeson, of course, went. We know that Elhaj Malik El-Shabazz, Malcolm X. Well, now it's time for us, and we're going to go to the UN and begin to declare what is rightfully ours and to fight for it and win, especially in the name of Queen Mother Moore. Dr. Randy Clark, you've got the floor for your closing comments for tonight.
Well, my closing comments is when we make this song for the sisters, we should do it like the South African national anthem, where it's sung in parts, and there should be a part where we have a song that's brothers and sisters singing together. So, yes, have a song for the sisters and then a song for us together. And then we need to put one together with the brothers. And I think the one that will come, bring us all together. Can you imagine that? If you had the first part, y'all sing yours, then we sing together. Wouldn't that be beautiful? Okay.
We're going to put it together. We're going to do it.
Yeah. Put it
right,
all
sister?
Together.
Right, sister? Right, we're going to do it.
I will give that some thought. I certainly shall. I like it. I mean, I definitely like it. But I have to be honest with you and say, even though I agree we should have some songs where, you know, it's both brothers and sisters, I also agree that sisters should have their own.
I said that. I never said no. I absolutely
you know.
That's what I'm saying. One shared, cause we're, and one separate, and that would be beautiful.
Okay. I could
I'm a both hand person. I always like many solutions. Many solutions.
No doubt.
But that's a beautiful
but I feel that time, the time is now. I feel
absolutely.
The energy in the air. I mean, you know, Whitney Houston was my idol. Every time I would sing The Greatest Love of All, there's not one talent show that I have not sung in and that I have not won. And, you know, and when Whitney was murdered, that right there, I just started immediately. The anger. I know I have emotions. I got real angry, and then I watched the documentary, and you know, on this on what, you know, the, I was told the 60th Jubilee of Queen Elizabeth, they had took Whitney in Houston and used her energy for this woman's 60th anniversary, you know, and it just did something to my spirit. And I was out there in Newark. The day of Whitney's funeral, I was out there.
Well, you know, again,
I'm feeling you because she passed 2 days after my birthday, and she had been on my mind for 2 weeks. And so imagine.
She fought for her life. She, you know, they ruled her death for homicide. You know, I knew it from day one. Whitney was fighting for her life. And then, you know, Khan told it. They're sacrificing our people's lives in Hollywood right before our eyes. Right before our eyes. They're killing our people, and we're not doing nothing about it.
And the same one, Clive Davis, did in, however he did it, Phyllis Hyman, because she called him a cum-drinking faggot when she wouldn't sing some of the music. And they had a fight, and that's when he decided. You look at, in fact, Clive Davis is one of the most wicked people. He's the one that's really hijacked a lot of black music. He's one of the people, you know, that got, you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. And he was sitting up on the front row. How do you have the devil sit the front row of a funeral of someone like Whitney Houston? He should have had to stay in the back.
Well, we did a ritual. We did a ritual to release her spirit. We did a ritual to release her spirit. Yes, we did.
Well, that's a whole nother area that we're going to talk about in the near future. We talked about, and we talked about it briefly tonight, and that is self-defense. You know, again, I'm a very holistic person and believe very strongly that we have to defend ourselves, not just physically, but mentally and spiritually. And we talked about putting something together, because under the MWM umbrella, for those of you who tune in on a regular basis, then you know we have something also called the Million Woman Ministries, and we'll be bringing that forward now as well, because, again, we have to deal with balance, what some call ma'at. But nevertheless, it is what it is. And with that balance, we have to deal with all of these areas, or at least, you know, many of the areas. And so, and moving forward, we'll be bringing something forward called the Shekhmet Society. And the Shekhmet Society is one of the spiritual self-defense components. Okay. I told a brother about it once, and he got scared and never called me back again. For weeks he would call me up all the time. And I told him that. I said, you know what? In the near future, we're going to put together the Shekhmet Society, because these people who betray us, sell us out, and all of that, they really need to be dealt with. Well, that brother never called me back again.
It's okay. Was it meant?
You know. So those who are not familiar with Shekhmet, let me just tell you, from the kinetic standpoint, Shekhmet is the energy that deals with things quite well and quite effectively. Once it is determined that it needs to be dealt with, it gets dealt with. So I'll leave it at that for right now, but I can assure you, for any of our people, no matter what system you are working with, if you are interested in self-defense, fighting back spiritually, the Shekhmet Society might be for you.
Okay. Like the revolution, they still try to figure out how the women in Haiti whip Napoleon's tail. The sisters still paying for whipping Napoleon's butt with water.
Absolutely.
What they use, the spirit of our ancestors.
Absolutely.
And water.
Absolutely.
But he was calling, you know what his concern was? His concern wasn't taking over Haiti. His concern was us waking up all over the world. That was his main concern,
right.
Napoleon.
Right. And that's what I often say nowadays. I say that our women, we are one of our best-kept secrets when it comes to dealing with fighting back. And not only that, and as you mentioned, Haiti or IET, as I mentioned to you earlier today, my sister, my last trip to Africa was to Benin, or also known as Dahomey. And, of course, the warriors of Dahomey are renowned. So I'll leave that at that as well. Family, we have come to our last few minutes of this segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. Going back to what Sister Amy was saying, we do have a telephone conference call that will take place on Tuesday. We now do it every Tuesday. And this is particularly for those who are considered to be TIs and or what we also call T-O-G, okay? Actually, it's TGOs, which is targeted groups and organizations, because, again, we talked about COINTELPRO. We know in this day and age they have upped the ante, and I don't know what name we will use, but the fact of the matter is there are our groups and organizations are, in fact, targeted. So we need to make certain that we are aware of that and have, you know, some strategies to deal with that. The same for the TI. So, again, on Tuesdays at 8 o'clock, if you'd like more information, please email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. We also appreciate any donations that you would like to bring our way. Again, we do not solicit grants or corporate sponsoring, definitely not. So please support the Men and Women Movement. We have now started our membership campaign. We have several. Again, if you want more information, please send us an email, nationalmwm@aol.com. Our mailing address for your contributions / donations is National Million Women March or National Million Women Movement, if you prefer, P.O. Box 53668, Philadelphia, PA, 19105. Again, National MWM, P.O. Box 53668, Philadelphia, PA, 19105. We'll be in D.C. October 25th. Please come out, say a few words, bring your complaint. You actually need to send us your complaint before Friday. If you have petitions that you want to begin have circulated or presented, if you have letters of complaint or letters of concern, we want them. Let's do this. Let's do it collectively. One person trying to do this stuff by themselves, two, three, or even four, however many, we would be more effective if it's 1,000 of us, if it's 10,000 of us, and certainly if it's 1,000,000 of us. With that said, we're going to close out this segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. We want to thank our sister Mecca for coming in and sharing, you know, her experiences and story and information. And as usual, always Dr. Randy Short is always on point, always lighting up our fire, and we certainly appreciate it all. Let's see, we'll probably have some special editions this week, so we'll keep you posted on that. And, of course, again, if you want to stay in tune, meaning if you want to keep your information going for our blast, our e-blast, just feel free to send us an email at nationalmwm@aol.com, and we'll make sure we keep you in the loop via email. Dr. Randy Short, thank you again so much, and certainly Sister Mecca. And, hey, I guess we can now leave everyone, as I oftentimes greet them, and that's in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep. And remember, there can be no real peace, no real Hotep, until there is truly justice. Well, we used to say, no justice, no peace.
No peace.
No justice, no peace.
No peace.
No justice.
No justice.
No peace.
No peace.
Absolutely. All right, family, we're out. Promote you to the Shinda. Together we shall win. Till next time, peace out.